Hello and welcome back to the Chelsea Echo and welcome to your match preview of Chelsea's biggest game of the season. Well, that's my opinion anyway, Dan might disagree, but I just hate Tottenham. Ladies and gentlemen, Tottenham away, 3 Point Lane, Sunday kickoff. Ange Postecoglou, just the way we play, mate, Tottenham Hotspur versus Chelsea. Dan, are you excited?
I think I am, especially after seeing Spurs fans having a go at Ange and Ange looking like he was going to dive headfirst into that away end.
Very funny. He looked very much like a bloke I'd see down like in Haringey when you say his souvlaki's not very good. What you said to me? Going to jump straight in. You could see the Greek coming out of him there. I think he thought it was a Spartan, but you all know he was definitely not. Probably more of an Athenian. That's what I think. I know Athenians actually. They actually had an understanding of philosophy. In fact, no, he does. You know what? He is very much an Athenian because he's so stuck with his philosophy that it's going to drive him out of a job just like it drove the Athenians out of existence, right? That's what I think. Look at me. History, mate. We talked films last week. We've done a little bit of history at the top this week. We're really intelligent, aren't we? I'm quite proud of us.
I have to say, I want a bit of souvlaki. My better half's family has Greek heritage, so I have tasted quite a bit of Greek food. I actually have celebrated Greek Easter over the last 2 years.
That actually sounds like a lot of fun. I'm guessing was that a lot of barbecues, right? Like and proper. Like we're talking like
Oh, but the thing is, it's the food is like. Next, like I've never seen so much food in my life.
Oh yeah, no, it's mad.
It's insane. It's Greeks mad. Are insane. Like generally, like it's like an Olympic sport to them eating.
I mean, generally, because do you know, I every time I go on Twitter, he doesn't post it as much anymore. Maybe I just don't see it. Harry Simeu, so Chronicles of a Goon, if people don't know, obviously he's a fantastic journalist as well on Talksport. He always used to post on a weekend. He did like the. He did like souvlaki and all of that on a proper barbecue. I always was so jealous. It always looked amazing. So I'd always look at it. And that's the one thing I want to go to a proper Greek house, have a Greek meal. That's the one thing I'd love to do because for me, right? I don't know how you feel about it because I know you and I have very similar heritages. I don't consider when people say what's your favorite food. I never say Italian because to me that's home food. Like I'm used to that. For me, it's like always Greek or Turkish. That is my favorite cuisine. I just love it. You know, it is so good. Like I could eat like a plate full of hummus and a plate full of tzatziki, no problems whatsoever. That's probably also why I look like the way I do as well.
I had a mentally good curry on Wednesday night. I actually was unable to watch the Southampton game live because I was out for a family curry. And man, that was a good curry. It's the best naan bread I've ever had in my life. Like generally, like I couldn't believe that this thing was real. I thought I think I went into a food coma after.
That's always a good sign when you do that. I mean,
it was that good.
Have you? I mean, we'll definitely have to do a Christmas pod. But have you kind of started planning your Christmas meals and how you're going to do it yet?
Not entirely. Well, it's kind of as you know, my Papa Child's his birthday falls on Christmas Eve. So really, my family's Christmas starts on Christmas Eve properly. So we're going to the Ivy for his.
Look at you.
I have to say, the Ivy steak in the Ivy, man. Jesus Christ! I've never sound more middle class in my life. But the steak in the Ivy was amazing. So I think I might have that again. It's the only time all year I will eat smoked salmon is. The starter at the Ivy. Like, I feel like I sound so posh at the moment, but really,
can I just say, you're just a culinary genius, my friend. That's what it is. You know good food. There's not a problem.
Marco
with that.
Pierre Childs here.
Marco Pierre Childs.
I know. knows his food at Christmas. But I have to say, just today, me and my dad went halves on buying two cases from Adnams of my favorite German Pilsner. Bitburger. It's kind of the only time I have it all year is at Christmas. So I'm excited to have the Bitburger at Christmas because it's the best.
It's going to be good. I want to hear all the reviews. I want to have like a Daniel Childs beer review, a salmon review.
Yeah.
I want to just all that's got to happen. I do feel like as well because we've not done one. We didn't do one last year, and I think it's important we do one because obviously you haven't confirmed to me yet, but you potentially are coming on the pub crawl for my birthday, which is going to be fun. But I do feel like me, you, Tom, you know, and anyone else who's done stuff with the Echo this year, I feel like it is a necessity that we have a Christmas meal. And when you said a curry, I could murder a lamb address. I really could. So I think we won't do a mukbang because, you know, it's not 2019 and, you know, no one wants to hear someone eating whilst they're talking about the football. But I do think a Christmas curry, Chelsea Echo with the mics, get the score on. I think that'd be good. Get that sorted. I think that's something we should discuss.
I do want at some point, we should do it in podcast form, and maybe it should be the Christmas podcast this year, is the Power Hour. Have you ever done a Power Hour before?
No, go on, tell me what a Power Hour is.
So basically, I think it's a very American thing. I've only seen Americans do it, but effectively, it's every 60 seconds, you take a shot of beer.
Oh, that's going to be vicious. Oh, that'll be vicious, and I'm so keen for that. We'll have to obviously probably heavily doctor it, because for all of you that don't know, Dan's obviously very professional, but he does become massively racist after four pints. You know, you should see it. You should see what he says about Italians. It's shocking. We've had fights. We actually nearly started a fight club when Dan got quite drunk. So you know, he's after about four pints, quite racist. After about six, starts fighting people. But then, you know, after eight, he returns. You know, he's a lover, not a fighter. So, you know, yeah. that's what happens. But speaking of lovers and fighters and being very keen for a Power Hour pod, we'll see what the score has to say about that. But Chelsea are playing Tottenham this weekend, and it is a big game, obviously, for all Chelsea fans. For me personally, my first ever trip to Wembley, my first ever cup final, my first ever loss ever watching Chelsea growing up was the 2008 League Cup final. Was it Carabao at that point? No, it wasn't. It was Capital One at that point.
I think it was still Carl. Surely it was. I think it was still the Carling era. I'm almost certain it was the Carling era. Still,
it might have been. Yeah, whatever it was, that was the first time it happened. That's what gave me my deep hatred for Tottenham Hotspur, to the point where I just my blood boils at the thought of them. But then I also laugh when they lose to teams they really shouldn't do. But as we did last week, Dan, I think it's important we kick off. We did our little rabbit hole, which we're going to go down again this week. Go back in time, and I'd like you to tell me, aside from the obvious, so I think you were at the Battle of the Bridge as well, weren't you? We were both there. So we could talk about that till the cow come out, but I also feel that might be slightly, a bit boring. Can you tell me what your favourite game, Chelsea versus Spurs, was growing up?
Oof. I feel like the one that sticks out from sort of like the mid-noughties was the William Gallas late screamer, 05-06.
Mm-hmm.
But it's weird because me and you have very different perspectives on this rivalry. And it's not that I don't dislike Spurs and don't understand the rivalry. It's just in terms of like levels of disliking kind of hostility or just like care in a fixture, this is not the big one for me. Like Liverpool is streets ahead of this. I think Arsenal is mainly ahead of this, and it's weird because we're the same age, and I think that in some ways this rivalry is somehow a generational thing, it feels like at times. That was slightly heated up during the Pochettino era because you said the Battle of the Bridge. Obviously that game, in terms of one I was present at, I still think that game stands out purely for the celebrations after that Hazard goal. The bizarre thing, because it was such a crap season, even when we won the league under Conte, I didn't see celebrations like that at the Bridge. And it's probably the loudest I've heard the Bridge for a goal in a long time.
Yeah, I'd agree. I think
it's still up there.
Yeah, it's probably the best atmosphere I've ever personally experienced at Stamford Bridge. I think. I'm trying to think of what comes closer, but I think it's also because of how magical sounds a bit cheesy, but that season, obviously what Leicester were doing, and the fact that Chelsea played a hand in that and we won Leicester the title, stopped Spurs winning a trophy to continue their drought as well. You know, I think the culmination of that, and like you said, having such a poor season and the fire in that game as well, it was just the perfect storm. And it just, I think just definitely the best atmosphere I've ever experienced.
I would say the 2015 League Cup final was a favourite too. I remember really obviously desperately wanting Chelsea to win that, and they did. And, you know, obviously it led before, you know, us winning the league title that season, and Diego scoring and JT scoring before half time. Obviously tons of celebration there. But then also I think the win in December 2019 under Frank just before Christmas was a really defining one, I think, for that season. And I think it's probably one of the most lasting images from Frank's time as Chelsea coach, of him celebrating with that away end. Because, I mean, arguably a little bit like this season, in the sense that fans have been clamouring for us to win a big game, and it really hadn't happened. And of course, you added the narrative spice to that game of Jose Mourinho then taking over and being in the opposite dugout. And I think a few weeks before then, Chelsea's form had really started to nosedive a bit. We lost a few games, and Spurs had a bit of an uptick under Jose coming in. And just seeing the way that game played out, where Anthony Taylor was the ref, you obviously had the penalty moment, but Willian with a special with his right foot, and obviously scored the penalty, Son getting the red card in the second half.
Gazzaniga not getting one as well.
Yeah, it did feel like quite a defining win. And of course, we beat them again later in that same season. The weird thing is, what is, because we beat them so frequently, I do wonder if it's like, you know, you feel a little bit sport for choice, and it kind of feels like a pretty regular.
Yeah,
you know, I mean, last season's 4-1 was weird in the sense that we absolutely battered them 4-1, and it was hilarious. More so the reaction of Spurs fans trying to claim that it was some sort of moral victory that they got battered 4-1 at home and they went down to 9 men. I think that just sums up that club in so many ways. But also, I remember being annoyed after that game. Because I was like, the management of that game from Chelsea players, just because the weird thing about it was we didn't score especially 3 and 4 till the latter stages of that game. So I was furious watching that second half, our inability to break down one of the stupidest high lines I've ever seen in my life. Yeah. So it's really a relationship with this game, because I understand its importance. I understand and respect, you know, you saying that it's one of the biggest games for you in the season, if not the biggest. But I don't know, I still think that, you know, it doesn't quite hit the same heights for me as like Liverpool or Arsenal.
That's fair. I think it's also... one of the great things about being a Chelsea fan is we have so many rivalries. But one of the bad things about it, and I always get quite jealous of Arsenal and Spurs fans, or Liverpool and Everton fans, or Celtic and Rangers fans, is we don't have that direct rivalry. It's almost like Fulham fans and Chelsea fans. I have a lot of Fulham fans talk about how they hate Chelsea, but then realistically, their rivalries were always been more with Brentford or more with QPR. And we kind of look at all the teams in West London almost like little brothers. It's like, yeah, right, mate, how you doing? Yeah, you keep talking, you do your thing. Like, it's more of an annoyance. So that's why I think you speak to so many different Chelsea fans. It's, you hate Arsenal Liverpool more than you hate Spurs. I hate Spurs the most, but realistically, you know, I do hate Arsenal and Liverpool as well quite a lot. And it's definitely grinding my gears a little bit more over the past few years, especially with, you know, both of them being quite good now. And being a little bit too loud about it in some cases. So I'm very much in a case of, you know, it's almost a bit of an equal. So some fans say they hate West Ham the most, which I've never understood, because West Ham have never really been that good. So, you know, there's lots of different ways to look at this. But the one game I wanted to talk about, I was really hoping you'd mention it, because it's got my funny fact in it, and you didn't, was the 5-1, right? Where we, as you said, we beat them quite a lot. So this was FA Cup, one of the best games. 5-1 win for Chelsea. Gareth Bale scored. And then obviously you had Didier Drogba, Juan Mata, Ramirez, Lampard, Malouda. Like, absolutely played Spurs off the park. So we're going to play the game again, which we played last week, Dan, which you were utterly hopeless at. And I'd like you to guess the 11s. So the Spurs team will do last, because that's got my fun fact in it. But can you tell me the Chelsea team that played Tottenham in the FA Cup and beat them 5-1?
Petr Cech and goal.
Yep.
Bissingwa.
Yep.
David Luiz.
Yep.
Gary Cahill.
Nope.
Alex.
Nope.
JT was playing then, he wasn't suspended.
JT was playing. Cahill came on, but he didn't start.
Ashley Cole.
Yeah.
Frank.
Yeah.
Midfielders. Mikel.
Yeah.
I'm trying to remember if at this time we were playing a 4-4-2 or not.
4-2-3-1.
Malou. 4-2-3-1.
Yeah.
Okay. Mikel, Frank, Mata.
Yep.
Malouda.
Came on, didn't start.
Kalou.
Kalou, yep.
Didier.
Yep.
Last one. Morelis.
Nope. You're going to kick yourself if you don't get this, but you're doing prices for elimination, so I'm pretty sure you'll get him next. Oh, Dan, come on. I know, you just know there are people screaming at this podcast right now because you've not said the name. It is so blatantly obvious and you've completely missed
Ramirez.
It. There we go. Got there in the end. Fernando Torres, Florian Malouda, Gary Cahill were the three players that came on. Rest of the players on the bench that day. Daniel Sturridge, Raul Morelles, Michael Essien, and the king of goalkeepers, or the prince, because the king was Rob Green, Ross Turnbull. So that's that. Spurs team, Dan.
Carlo Cuccini.
Nailed it. Yeah, straight off of that. Are you cheating? That was too quick. I don't know how I feel about that.
No. I remember, because when you mentioned this, I remember just, because I remember Cuccini played for Spurs during this era, and I remember him, us battering them a few times and him being in goal for it.
All right.
Are we still in the Ledley King era where he plays like a couple of games a season?
We are. You mean the Reece James era?
Yeah. obviously Gareth Bale.
Yeah.
Aaron Lennon.
Yeah.
No, it won't be. I feel like Van der Vaart had already left at this point.
You sure?
Let's go Van der Vaart.
Yeah, Van der Vaart. You've got so far, you got 1, 2, 3, 4. Was Ledley King one of your answers?
Yeah.
Yeah, you got 5 so far.
Adebayor?
Adebayor, yeah.
Huddleston?
No, Tom Huddleston.
Trying to think, that's it. I know Crouch played for them, but if I've already gone on a bio, I don't think they would have played two.
No Peter Crouch. Strikers. No Peter Crouch in this one.
I'm trying to think on the other side who would have played. Is Danny Rose playing for Spurs at this point?
It wasn't Danny Rose, but he was playing. He was on the bench. Didn't come on. It was a left back that considered becoming a porn star.
I mean, that's a long list. considered becoming a porn star. I'm trying to go to like the, because my memory's better on like the era just after this for Spurs and the bomb squad that Pochettino got out. Yeah. So I'm trying to think through names.
You've got, just going through it, you've got one of the players is now a manager. One was a rubbish pundit.
Oh, Jamie O'Hara.
No, he wasn't there. One played for Chelsea. That should narrow it down very easily for you. One's wanted to consider becoming a porn star. One's an active player. And one is now a manager in the Championship.
Woodgate?
Nope.
The one who played for Chelsea. Would you have played for Chelsea before or after this?
I'm not telling you that. That's too. That would narrow it down too much. I've just given you a whole list of clues. You tell me when you give up, mate, and I'm going to make you squeal.
I give up.
Okay, the team that day: Carlo Cudicini in goal, Kyle Walker at right back, William Gallas and Ledley King were the two centre backs, Benoit Assou, the Cameroonian man who considered becoming a porn star at left back. Aaron Lennon right wing, Luka Modric and Scott Parker as the two defensive midfielders.
Now, I considered Luka Modric, but in my head I thought he's already left. But no,
all I'm saying, it's all well and good considering, mate, but you didn't say it. So, you know, it is what it is. Game's a game. Mm. You fucked up there. Gareth Bale on the left, Van der Vaart in the 10, and Emmanuel Adebayor up front. Brad Friedel, Ryan Nelson, Danny Rose, Jake Livermore, and Giovanni Dos Santos were the substitutes that day. My fun fact is not about Ben Morasso Okotu wanting to be a porn star. It was actually in fact that after his career in football, Rafa van der Vaart briefly became a professional darts player. So, Dan, I'm going to pose the question which you posed in regards to poker last week. Who in this Chelsea squad do you reckon is really good at darts?
I feel like whatever question on this, like, scenario, this fancy scenario you throw at me, my answer is always going to be, from now on, Renato Baker. Because he just fits, doesn't he? He fits as a poker player. I think he would fit as a snooker player. He'd fit as a darts player.
No, I just feel as a darts player, he's too chilled. I can't imagine him walking out to Pitbull. Do you know what I mean? Like, can you imagine him at Ali Pally? I just couldn't. Like, Ali Pally, it just feels like, because of the tattoos, again, Enzo Fernandez is one of my answers. I can imagine him trying to whip up the crowd, but I don't know many good Argentinian darts players. You know, it doesn't feel like a very South American thing. It feels sort of very Western Europe. So I'm trying to narrow it down that way, and I was going through the English players, who is the most Brexit of our players? I think he probably doesn't count, but I'd say Alfie Gilchrist is probably the best player for darts at Chelsea, but he's on loan at Sheffield United right now, so undoubtedly honing his skills up there. But in the current squad,
I'm not sure. Like, would Mudryk count? I mean, again, we another one we're gonna nominate for all of these is Mudryk.
Mudryk as a darts player. By the way, Lab North, the pictures you sent, I showed them to Dan yesterday. That was so good.
Yeah, they're incredible.
It's next level. We've just got to try and figure out for you who the darts player is going to be. Like, I'm trying to go through the team now. Centre backs, no one there really. Left back, who we got? Renato Vega, or you got Cooker. Oh yeah, Mark Cucurella, just because he's such a shithouse. Yeah. I think he'd be a cracking darts player.
Oh yeah, he'd definitely give it to his opponent after throwing each dart. He'd definitely be giving it.
Oh yeah, like he's got a touch of the Van Gerwens about him, hasn't he?
Everyone in Ali Pally would be wearing the wig. You know, you can see it now.
You imagine it. Cucurella. Just seeing that it's coming out.
He'd come out to La Cucurella, La Cucurella.
No, I reckon he would come out to Pitbull. I could see him coming out to Fireball or something like that.
Mr. Worldwide.
Or do you know what he'd come out to? Tequila.
As he down shots of tequila, he's got a tequila gun.
Oh yeah, I could see him doing that. I genuinely think, you know, Ali Pally is something I've always wanted to experience. But there you go, Mark Cucurella is our nomination, guys. So let us know, obviously on Twitter, who you nominate to be your darts player from the Chelsea squad. Mark Cucurella is mine and Dan's nomination. So, you know, we'll work it backwards from there. But obviously, that is the fun part of the pod over. We've now got to get into the nitty gritty, the numbers that stuff.
I thought of, like, if we keep on doing this week on week, we're gonna run through like a lot of sports, and I just sort of went on Wikipedia, list of sports, and just looking at some of these for upcoming episodes: break dancing, cheerleading, dance sport, dragon dance, figure skating, free running,
dragon dance. What the fuck is dragon dance?
I have no idea. I've never heard. There's dragon dance. Dragon dance is like the Chinese cultural dance, apparently. It's apparently considered a acrobatic art of sports. Parkour, there's and
parkour,
paragliding.
No, but the whole tangent is based on a player from the opposition team. So in that, we've got to find, there'll be players who have done weird things that have moved on to other things. So that's what we're trying to figure out there. But yeah, it's just trying to address that and figure it all out. But yeah, guys, let us know who would be your ultimate darts player and your ultimate dragon dance player. It's great. Let's go for it. What'll be that as well? You know, that's what we want to figure out. Obviously, Ben Morasa Kotu, I'm pretty sure a lot of you thought we'd go down the porn star route, but that's also way too obvious. So we're not going to do that because, you know, we're also not children. Okay. and I don't know what that is. I just think I've heard it's someone who just is really, really good at bouncing on mattresses. But anyway, we will leave you with that thought as you undoubtedly head into the only part of the show that has a jingle. Ladies and gentlemen, it's Stat Shaggers.
The Chelsea Echo presents Stat Shaggers.
Right then, it's the big one. It's Tottenham away, and we all had fun there last year. Can we do it again? Well, let's see. I'm here for the stats, of course. That's why I'm here. And overall against Tottenham, we played 177 times. We won 79 of them, that's 45%. Drawn 42 and lost 56. So once again for Chelsea, it is a winning record. Of course, last game we had Southampton well and truly conquered. And I thoroughly enjoyed the tune while I was at St Mary's of We've Got Our Chelsea Back. We're now up to second in the table. And thanks to Newcastle drawing 3-3 with Liverpool, we have gained 2 points on the leaders. Now we travel again to Spurs, who it does appear have only one fit centre-back after Ben Davis got injured in Spurs. 1-0 loss to Bournemouth on Thursday night. So it is a massive opportunity to keep our momentum going in our only fixture against a traditional Big Six team until the 25th of January. 3 wins in a row for Chelsea since the international break and 10 goals scored, only 2 conceded. And after Southampton, we are now officially the top scoring team in the league with 31 after 14 games. So all is well. Tottenham, our opponents this weekend, have been an utterly bizarre team to watch this season in much the same vein as they were last year. For example, in their last 10 games, they have beaten Manchester City twice and thumped Aston Villa at home, but they've also lost to Ipswich at home, drawn to Fulham at home, and lost to Galatasaray and Bournemouth. They are utterly bizarre, as I've already said. As a result of this inconsistency, though, Spurs now sit in 10th place. Such is the congestion in the middle of the table. 2 points off the European places, but now 6 off the Champions League spots, which I'm sure would have been their target pre-season. If we look at their last 5, though, well, it's a bit grim, really. If you're a Spurs fan, for us, it's obviously very entertaining. And it appears pressure may be starting to build on Ange Postecoglou, as was shown the other day with his apologising to the fans post the Bournemouth defeat and the post-match interview where he basically stared at the floor and openly said it was not good enough and he needs to find a way to fix it. In their last 5, Spurs have only won once. That ridiculous 4-0 away drubbing of Manchester City at the Etihad, the first game back after international break. They have since drawn against both Fulham and Roma at home. They lost to Ipswich the game before the international break, which is, of course, the Attractor Boys' only win of the season so far in the Premier League, before losing to Bournemouth at the Vitality last time out. Well, all I can say to that is imagine doing that. Christopher Nkunku, thank you very much. Spurs are still the joint third top scorers this season with 28, so are averaging 2 goals a game and have conceded the same as Chelsea have, which is 15, and that is only joint third, only behind are Liverpool and Arsenal. So statistically, they should probably be a lot higher up the league, which shows this, A, to be a challenging game, and B, football is not played on paper, and as I said last time, as much as I wish it were. Well, we all remember the last time we played Spurs away, as who will ever forget potentially the most ridiculous game of football ever seen. Of course, Chelsea won 4-1 with Nico Jackson scoring a hat-trick, but it genuinely should have been at least 10 against 9-man Spurs, who were down to, well, 9 men, duh, but they lost 2-2 red cards to Destiny Udogie for a second yellow and Christian Romero for a red. Udogie arguably should have seen straight red for his ridiculous attempt at a tackle on Raheem Sterling. And Ange Postecoglou, despite that, decided to continue playing his incredibly insane, well, as he likes to call it, brave high line. Well, it did eventually cost them, but it should have been a lot more. Over the last 10 games between these two sides, it's been very dominant for the Blues. Chelsea have won 7, drawn 2, and lost just 1 of those last 10. And with that solitary loss coming under, you guessed it, Graham Potter in February 2023, a 2-0 loss. That one. In total, over those 10 games, Chelsea have scored 17 goals, only conceding 5. So there you go. And I actually really enjoyed, you know, as a big stats man, shock. Perhaps the best stat when looking at our recent history with Spurs is that Chelsea have kept 6 clean sheets in the last 10 games, including 5 in a row in all competitions between November 2020 and January 2022. And, of course, the last game, which we won 2-0 at the Bridge. On to the managers. Well, this is pretty short. Enzo has not managed against Spurs before. Done. And his opponent, Ange Postecoglou, has an awful record against Chelsea after last season. He played twice, but lost 4-1 at home and 2-0 away. And as previously alluded to, now appears to be slightly on the ropes with his job. Let's hope, despite West Ham and Wolves being dubbed El Sacico, Chelsea can put the boot in and get rid of another manager. Let's hope so, eh? Up the Chelsea.
The Chelsea Echo presents Stat Shaggers.
Right, Dan. Thoughts?
Oh, no. Hang on. Let's try this again.
It is the world's worst football chant, but he's so invested in it. It's so good. It'd be like singing a chant about your own name. I don't know how I'd feel about that. It would. I'd feel slightly insecure.
Louis, Louis,
I did have a couple, didn't I? I had people used to sing things at me. It was great. From a distant, far gone era, that no, Dan. Because now we have to grow up and now we have to talk about Chelsea versus Tottenham, or actually Tottenham versus Chelsea, because it's the other way around. So, Dan, let's jump straight into it. And obviously, we've now figured out that our model for talking about all of these games, right, is going to be based around the Echo 11. So all our talking points are going to be centred around the players that are on the pitch. And of course, we're going to jump straight in, because we do have one straight off the bat, ladies and gentlemen, the goalkeeper position. Dan, has Philip Jorgensen proven why he should be Chelsea's number one at last, or are we going to have the same conversation every week?
I think it's the Echo special. We just have the same conversation about Robert Sanchez. Now, for this week, he was decent against Aston Villa, and I think Maresca already confirmed post-Southampton that Sanchez is going to start. So he's going to start.
Waste of time. Disappointed. Not angry, just disappointed. So with that being said, then we'll move straight on to right back. There was a bit of an interesting, because of course, when we talked about the game at the weekend, we put Mal Augusto straight in at right back, but he actually didn't start, which I thought was intriguing. And obviously we saw him start in midweek. Do you think that's an injury concern, or do you think we're actually going to see Mal Augusto coming back into the side now and holding down that right back position whilst Reece James is unavail?
I'm very unsure, because the way Maresca approached the Villa game surprised me. And, you know, given it's been an interesting week, because you have two Champions League kind of qualifying rivals in the Premier League with Villa and Spurs. And then sandwiched in between that is Southampton, where he was able to rotate very extensively against one of the worst Premier League teams I think we've ever seen. And Chelsea were able to get away with it. So it allowed him a dual purpose of, you know, giving those fringe players minutes, but then being able to rest his first teamers. I still kind of, there's a large part of me that leans towards him just doing what he did against Villa. And we see Caicedo listed as the right back, but really he's playing as a central midfielder. And then you have the back three, because I think it works so well. The good thing about Chelsea is you have that flexibility under Maresca, which is probably hard for Ange Postecoglou to guess what Chelsea are going to do. I think that's a good thing to have. And Gusto had a decent midweek game. However, defensively, Chelsea were quite shaky against a really bad team and still let up opportunities, even though we won convincingly 5-1. So I'm not sure Gusto starts this game, I have to be honest. Unless Maresca feels, based on the opponent, that he needs a conventional fullback and we can't. Because you've got to factor in that Villa don't really play as many obvious wide threats. You know, they do kind of play this 4-1-4-1 formation, or a 4-4-2 where you have Rodgers and Watkins up top, and McGinn kind of drifts a little bit wide. And, you know, he didn't bring on Liam Bailey to the second half. So with Spurs, who do have a lot of injuries at the moment, maybe he feels in this type of game with Spurs threats on a wide point of view looking a lot more strong and dangerous, he may just feel, I need two natural left backs. And also, maybe factoring into this is the injury to Fofana. He maybe had more confidence last week to do that because he had Fofana.
Yeah, there is that. I think it's going to be intriguing to see how he addresses that situation. I think, look, Wesley Fofana, he could be out for a few weeks here. So I think maybe this could reinforce Chelsea's need to strengthen the back in January. I feel like we're just going to repeat the same conversation for at least another month, Dan. It's going to be happening all the time. Whereas we're like, right, let's talk about the goalkeeper. Right, let's talk about the defence. Right, let's talk about the centre-backs. Like, it's going to happen every single week. And people are like, we don't need to listen to this bit because we know exactly what Lou and Danica say.
This is why the podcast has slowly descended. The first half of each podcast has slowly descended into just absolute stupidity and just things that really, you know, just we turn ourselves into football cliches. We turn ourselves into what if this footballer was a poker player, you know, discussions of players who've decided to become porn stars. You know, this is where it's descending, and it all stems from having the same mind numbing conversation about Chelsea players in starting 11.
It's something which, you know, no one cares about it really, Dan. Let's be honest. People will listen to this pod purely for the first part, because I seem to have noticed that the listening figures seem to die off after about half an hour. So I wonder why that is. You really enjoyed us talk about porn stars and poker players. That's exactly what you want. It's going to get tougher as the year goes on, but don't you worry, I will find ways around that. But yeah, no, I think, look, realistically, Chelsea's defensive frailties will be addressed in January. I don't think that's something which we're going to look at and see as it's not something not happening at all. For you, is Malo Gusto starting it right back then, or are you wanting to think of putting someone else there?
I think he might just go with Caicedo, Lavia and Enzo. So I think Caicedo will be written down as the right back.
Okay, I like that. Look at us inverting modern football. Let's talk about the half spaces, Dan, and playing on the turn and, you know, working through the lines. Shut the fuck up. Never mention field tilt. Who do you think you are? Tom Masters. Pack it in, all right? No statistics are wanted at this point. No need, all right? We'll crack on then. Right back, Moises Caicedo, but unlikely because he'll become a midfielder, obviously. Blah, blah, blah. Written down as a right back. You know the drill, guys. Your centre halves. If Wesley Fofana is unavailable, what are we looking at? Are we looking at Levi Colwill and Benoit Badiashile? Are we looking at Levi and Tosin? Are we looking at Levi Colwill on his own? Because I picked that before De Zassi. Like, what would you do? Like, what's going on?
Levi and his dog, you know, Levi and his cat, Levi with a shopping bag next to him.
Some call it a carabag. Huh?
A carabag.
Sent about from Azerbaijan. Jesus. Love that.
Oh, Jesus Christ. I think Ben Barbadishil will start here. I think he's been the best of the rest of the centre backs. He's not flawless. I still have some concerns that Barbadishil was as a dodgy moment in him per game, but I feel like if he's going to have to start at least two centre backs in this game, even if he is playing the three back system, and I think it will be Badiashile. I think it should be Badiashile because neither Tosin nor Dazassi in this level of game convinced me.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think Badiashile is somebody who, you know, like you said, compared to others, he's made me feel less nervous, but at the same time, I still continue to be nervous watching him at the back. I think that, again, realistically, as we said, Chelsea need to address centre-back in January. But we'll move swiftly on because we already said Levi Cole was going to be the other player. We've already talked about Chelsea's darts champion, Marco Correa, will be playing at left-back most likely. And the midfield, we've just named anyway by accident because Dan's decided to do the Echo 11, but in his weird way by talking about the midfield. It's just no need. So talk about field tilt and then completely ruins the show. Like, who is this guy? All right, so we've got Lavia, Enzo, the front line. Now, Chelsea won 5-1 against Southampton. Great performances by Jadon Sancho. Personal favourite of mine, João Félix, and a personal favourite of Dan, João Félix, also seemed to do quite well in that game. And obviously, Cole Palmer and Christopher Nkunku are players who continue to perform for Chelsea, and Nkunku continuing to knock on the door for that first 11. Nicholas Jackson undoubtedly will be the first name on the team sheet in terms of centre forward spot, but that back three behind him back three, that midfield three behind them, I should say, Dan. What are we looking at? It's going to be Cole Palmer, but do you see him maybe moving out to the right, or do you think Nonny's going to keep his place because of how well he performed, or do you think we're going to see a variation on that midfield three?
It's difficult, and it's a good problem for Maresca to have, that he does have a lot of players who are scoring, are being productive when he does put them out on the pitch and does rotate a bit. I think there is much of an argument if you're Pedro Neto to start here. I think if you're Sancho, you say, I've played the last two games, I scored in the last one. He had some decent moments against Villa. I feel like his comments about Madueke were pretty telling in terms of an approach, a tough love approach, but it seems to be working and it got the right response. I did think he would respond to being, not the drop sounds, harsh, but, not being in the lineup for the Villa game. And I think he responded in the best way possible against Southampton. So I think Madueke starts on the right, Palmer obviously behind Jackson. I feel Pedro Neto starts. That's just my instinct at the moment. But I do think it is a bit of a coin toss or flip, whatever you want to choose, between Neto and Sancho at the moment. Because I like what both players bring. I think Neto brings acceleration. I think he brings speed. And also an eye for a goal, more so than Sancho. But Sancho has some nice, delicate moments in his game where he can kind of shimmy and sort of like glide through certain moments of the game, which I think can be pretty helpful. So I feel as well that tactically, one of the things I'd be looking for when coming up against this Spurs side is energy and speed, not only because of the way Postecoglou defensively lines up and he doesn't really adapt from it at the moment. Spurs, if you've listened to anyone who covers Spurs recently, they're struggling with injuries, they're struggling with exhaustion of the players because they've been playing in the Europa League and some tough Europa League games where Postecoglou has kind of had to play his first choice team. So he hasn't been able, with the luxury that Maresca has in the Conference League, to fully rotate his team. So you need to add that speed and intensity and really go at Spurs, because I think it's clear here that if Chelsea win, it's already 9 points clear of Spurs. If Chelsea can make that double figures before Christmas against an opponent who you suspect are trying to contend for Champions League qualification, that's a big gap already. And Chelsea have to try and take that by the mantle, I think, and really solidify themselves even more in the top four. So I'd be looking to add speed, which is why if I'm going for speed, I'm going for Neto over Sancho.
Okay, no, I agree. I definitely would have Pedro Neto in the team. And then you're playing Cole Palmer in the 10, right? No room for Christopher Nkunku?
Yeah. I like Nkunku. I just don't think he starts games. I haven't seen. I mean, arguably since we had the conversation pre-Leicester, post-Leicester about this, another conversation I feel like we have on a weekly basis now. He scored in midweek. Yeah, it's another one. I love Nkunku, and I think that, again, you look at the space, you look at the high line, and you think about Nkunku's movement. But there is just a reality, if you bring Nkunku in, you probably are going to have to drop one of those wingers. You're not dropping Cole Palmer. And I'm just going on the averages of what Maresca has done so far this year. And the evidence in front of me tells me that it's likely when he goes into a game of this nature with his first choice options and he isn't looking to massively rotate, he's going to play the players he's stuck with. And I think that isn't Nkunku, unfortunately, so far this year. But maybe not unfortunately, because the team's winning. So it's hard for Nkunku and B-team players to really argue, because when he rotates, the team's winning. When he's sticking with the first choices, they're winning. So it's very hard to kind of question Maresca and say, you need to be playing me. And as well, we're scoring a ton of goals. A lot of those so far this year have been contributed by Christopher Nkunku. But I can't see him starting this game.
I mean, for me, I get what you're saying, but I actually had this discussion in a Chelsea group chat over the past couple of days, and I've become public enemy number one, because personally, I would start him. I think he's done enough to be given that opportunity, and as you know, like you're saying about the tough love approach with Nonny, I do feel that, you know, Christopher Nkunku, he doesn't need that because he's got the track record where he's done it every single week, and for me, Cole Palmer's proven that he can play pretty much anywhere in that front three.
Yeah.
And for me, it's very much a case of just let him do that. Let him have a free role. And especially with Spurs only having, as you said, they've had an injury crisis. They've only got one fit centre-back currently. If there's any game where you go all-out attack and you just go for the jugular, especially against Ange Postecoglou, who will just play the way he plays, mate, you know, I think that testing out Nkunku and Jackson together in this game is the opportunity. They could go for the jugular. You could see how they combine. And I think it would be a mistake to not do that, personally. Because, look, like I said, we're talking about the game on paper, right? You know, we're saying on paper, Moise Caicedo's been playing right back. We know he's been playing in midfield. But on paper, he's playing right back. On paper, Cole Palmer's playing on the right. Realistically, though, he's going to be pushing right forward. And you'll have a 3-3-4, basically. Oh, my God, it's gone tactical. Oh, I don't like that. You'll have that, you know, the three midfielders, the three defenders, and you have a front four just going for it. I don't see why this isn't something we would consider, especially in a game like this.
No, I think that the opportunity is absolutely there for Chelsea. It's a ground they're pretty good at. Like, in terms of record, I think we've won 5 of our 6 trips to that ground since it opened. So we have a good track record of winning there, beating Spurs, and it would end an excellent week for Enzo Maresca. To come out of this week with 9 points would be brilliant. To come out with this block of 4 Premier League games at the start of the festive period with 12 points is excellent. So it does feel like an opportunity has opened up here for Chelsea for a number of reasons. And in terms of confidence, in terms of form, Chelsea, I think for a lot of people, even though they're away from home, will be seen as the favourites for this game. So when that happens, you want Chelsea to kind of step up. Because I felt like when we went to Old Trafford, it felt like we kind of shrunk a little bit and we didn't rise to the occasion when we were expected to. And I think we allowed United a bit too much respect when we could have gone for the jugular there and maybe got a big win. This is a game where Chelsea do need to be a lot more authoritative. And as we spoke about earlier in the show, you know, joking aside, this is, for a lot of Chelsea fans, a very emotionally charged and symbolic game in the calendar. And it does come with some risks too, because as Maurizio Sarri found out, no matter how good his start was, it all started to derail. I think the tipping point really all began with that defeat away at Spurs in November. That was his first, I think, league loss or loss in any competition. And how quickly that spiraled. And when you lose away at Spurs, it's a very damning defeat. It's something that sticks in the minds of people. So that's got to be installed as well. So I wouldn't want to see Chelsea go out and be idiotic, like go out there and have no structure, have no balance, have no poise about it. You've still got to go with conviction and a decent game plan, because even with their issues, Spurs, you still look at, you know, Dejan Kulusevski, Dominic Solanke, James Maddison is fit for this game. Heung-min Son obviously has been one of the Premier League's most consistent attackers in the past decade, so they still have threats that can hurt you, so you have to factor that in as well.
Yeah, that is true. Maybe I'm just being a little bit too aggressive in thinking about it. Maybe my heart is ruling my head. So obviously, guys, let us know all your thoughts as well. Who would you start in this game? Am I right and is Dan wrong? The answer is yes, but, you know, we'll touch on that later anyway. But you've heard from me and Dan in regards to the first 11. You've heard the stats. Now it's time to listen to the big bald man, Enzo Maresca.
Enzo, hello. Nice to see you again. Are there any fresh injury or illness worries after Southampton? And how are the rehabs of Fofana and Rhys James going?
Yeah, both. They are slowly getting better. But as we said the other day, it's a matter of weeks. So they are still far. And the only one that is still ill is Misha Mudrik. And the rest, they are all okay.
Tottenham on Sunday, you were back in the top two of the Premier League for the first time in a few years. The fans are singing your name. They're singing, we've got our Chelsea back, and they're excited. Why aren't Chelsea in the title race?
No, I said we are very happy for the fans. Absolutely, because they deserve to live this moment. They can dream, we are very happy. And I said, we work every day to also to make them happy and proud of the players. And then for the rest, nothing to add. I said many times, I don't think we are there and we are ready to compete with Arsenal, Liverpool and City.
Just on Sunday, what about Spurs? Obviously, they were beaten at Bournemouth last night and Ange got a load of stick from some of the fans at the end of the game. What did you make of that? Was that unfair?
I think it's nothing new in terms of we depends a little bit of the results of the situation. And then it's a fair or unfair. It's our job.
And also, Tottenham are running out of centre-backs. Ben Davies played last night. He's got a scan today. Romero may not be fit. Do you think with their lack of fit defenders, you know, Cole Palmer and Jackson can exploit this on Sunday?
We try always to exploit, no matter the other team or the defenders that they are there. For sure, I think Romero can be back. So probably Romero can be the solution for them in this moment. But we see.
You have some things to say about Madueke at Southampton, about training harder, showing more ambition. We saw him training this morning. Is he taking that on board?
Yeah, absolutely. No, but Noni, I said, is overall is working well since we start. But sometimes it drops a little bit and it's not allowed to drop. It's just, but in terms of numbers, he's doing fantastic. Goal, assist, off the ball when we ask him to defend and to press, he's doing very well. The only reason I said this the other day is because I want the best for Noni. And probably the only way to get the best from him is to push him every time. And in the moment that he relaxes a little bit, he's wrong.
Enzo, and I appreciate in your mind it's a long way away, but how much is the Club World Cup going to impact your pre-season? Yeah. Can you afford to go on tour elsewhere? Or are you already decided that that's not possible?
I know the group because of yesterday, but I don't know which play we start. I don't know which play we finish. No, seriously. And I don't know which play we play. I don't have any idea yet, because when we start in June, when we start in June, when we're going to be May, I will start to see, okay, we play this day. But now I don't know. I know just the group and no more than that.
Yeah, I get that. I'm just sort of thinking if Chelsea get to, obviously you want to get to the final, but it's July the 13th. Talking about player welfare, which I think is right.
3-0, 30 or 13?
1-3.
1-3.
Yeah.
Yeah, in a normal last year, I think we start July 8th, yeah. 8 July. So, but for sure we have some day off in case we play the final. But I don't know.
Yeah, so sort of no decisions been made whether you're going to sort of have a pre-season tour like in America.
No, absolutely no.
And just quickly on sort of like referring to the Southampton game, for example, is the one criticism that you sort of have in your mind with your players, do you want them to become more ruthless, especially in front of goal? I know it sounds funny after scoring 5 goals, but yeah, they could have killed the game off a lot easier than they did.
Yeah, but I said I was upset the first 15-20 minutes because we were wrong in the way we were pressing. We prepared the pressing in one way, and for the first 15-20, I think until the first goal or the second goal, I don't remember, that I called some of the players on the bench, we needed to change. Because Southampton, even if they are with 4 points, is a team that if you don't press them higher, man-to-man, and you give them one extra player, you struggle to recover the ball because they are very good on that. And we were wrong. Then we scored 5, we could score more, for sure, but we are very happy scoring 5.
A bald man who pledges his head has spoken. The numbers have been given to you. Everything you need to know about Chelsea playing Tottenham has come to your front door. Ladies and gentlemen, this has been the Chelsea Echo. This has been your match preview. If you do enjoy the pod, please make sure you give us a 5-star review. Dan and I will be back next week, of course, to give you even more fantastic football news and fantastic football chat. I've been Louis. That was Dan. This is Chelsea Echo, and we'll see you next time. Ta-da!